That just counts us in.
Okay.
Can you hear this one? I think we're all good.
Yep, I can hear that one. Are you hearing this one?
Yes, does the intro for you.
Yeah. All right, we're back with episode number 2 of the Clydesdale Chronicle. We're wash rack adjacent. Today we're sitting down with the one and only Dan Jones of Bangor, Wisconsin. So, Dan, we kind of started this podcast to kind of get some stuff recorded. Just old stories. We want to get back to kind of how you got into it. Maybe some of your favorite sires or favorite mares. And just kind of get a brief overview about your start. So, take it away. How did you get into it? How did you start? Where are you at? How many horses you got?
Grew up with it. My grandfather bought his first Clyde in 1893, and we just kept going. They had champion mare at the International in 1929 with Lady Eleanor, and during the 30s, when times were really tough, the 1 year Dad said they were on the road 11 weeks in a row. The railroads gave you a special deal to haul you to shows, and you got the same box car, you built stalls in it. And he said, 11 weeks, they cleared $1,000 a week. That was more than they made on the farm the rest of the year.
Holy crap.
So 11 weeks was 11 weeks straight. We talk right now about the Classic Series and how the points chasers are spending so much time on the road. It's interesting. You're talking about the 30s and spending 11 weeks. Was it 11 weeks straight or 11 weeks throughout those 12 months?
I wouldn't have been 11 weeks straight, but it was at least 7 weeks straight. But they hit Wisconsin, Minnesota, North and South Dakota, and Indiana, Ohio, just all the Midwest horse shows. And at that time, they were set up so you'd go from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Ohio's on at the same time as Wisconsin.
Yeah.
When I started doing this, and after I got out of college, took over the farm, bought a $1,500 semi-tractor and a $1,000 trailer.
You couldn't even buy it.
No.
Anything that would run down the road for that nowadays.
I'm pretty sure you can't buy a bike for that right now.
I got my commercial driver's license out of a Cracker Jack box. Off I went and met a lot of wonderful and interesting characters along the way.
Yeah.
So back in that time when you had to get on the train, how far did you have to go from Bangor to get on the train? I'm pretty sure the train didn't stop right in Bangor. Did you have to travel?
Of course it stopped in Bangor.
Really?
Yeah. It also stopped in Rockland. And they would drop a car off a couple weeks in advance so you could
load the car.
Load the car ahead of time.
Load the car, and you knocked out boards so they got air. And then you built stalls in there.
Are you kidding me?
No. And then they put a water tank in there.
Yeah.
And you brought up hay and stuff. And then they would pick you up on their schedule. And Dad always talked about he was 16 or 17 years old. And Grandpa sent him with two or three guys in a boxcar load of horses to Chicago with $3-4 in his pocket. And he was coming down the next day on a passenger train. And they unloaded you in Chicago like 6 or 8 blocks from the amphitheater.
Okay.
So he said, I hired these, and they were there for that purpose, loafers. And they'd carry a show trunk the 6 or 8 blocks for a quarter.
Holy crap.
You know, hey, it's the Depression.
Yeah.
You know? And so he'd hired like 7 or 8 guys, and they got all the horses and the equipment down there, And then he turned to him and he said, I don't have any money. Come back tomorrow and I'll pay you.
And what do you follow through on it?
And thank God, one of the loafers, he said, I've worked for them before. If he says his dad's going to be here tomorrow and he'll pay us, we'll be here anyway. He'll pay us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Avoided a fight.
Yeah. Oh, pretty nuts.
Wouldn't have been much of a fight. He pounded knots on his head.
So when you got started on your own, Dan, did you start with some of your dad's breeding horses?
All of my breeds.
All of them were.
We were together, and then when he passed away, I got them all.
Okay.
So I started when I was 3 years old.
Okay.
And we were still using horses every day on the farm. And their main job at that time was to haul manure.
Yep.
And the hired man would come out with the first load about 7 when they were done milking. And I would sneak out of the house in my Dr. Denton's, climb up into his lap, and he'd wrap me up in his robe. And we'd go spread manure, and then he'd drop me off at the house on the way back in.
Oh,
my
fun.
Mother hated him.
Oh.
Can you imagine what I smell like?
Yeah.
Well, and my brother would not go anywhere near him.
The horses.
He said, you stink. Well, to me, he smelled like a horse, a cow, and sweat. Same thing my dad smelled like.
Yeah.
You know, only he didn't bathe as often as my dad.
So how many kids were in your family? You talk about a brother.
Two of us.
Just two of you.
I had an older brother.
Okay.
All right.
So then, when I was 4, my job was to sit on old Lulabelle and pull the hay up into the barn. And I was out there just driving away like crazy and didn't realize it was all voice commands from the barn.
Yeah. You know?
And a couple times I fell asleep on Lulabelle. And when it got time to go out and get another load of hay, they just set me in the shade.
Jesus.
And then in 1958, and a lot of people don't know this, I woke up one morning and a whole semi-load of Clydesdales had been dropped off at our farm.
Hmm.
Bud, Mr. Bush had found out how much people were knocking down on him, and he pretty much sold out the whole breeding farm.
And brought them up to your place.
Well, my dad got a semi-load of them. I have no idea
where the rest of them went.
Yeah, where the rest of them went.
Holy crap.
And what was more amazing, this is 1958. Horses are, if they're not gone, they're leaving.
Yeah.
And in 10 days, my dad, there was like, let's say 20, it was 18 to 20 horses.
Yep.
My dad had the 4 he wanted, and it sold the rest of them from Florida to Washington, you know, California to Maine.
So I never met your dad, but all I've ever heard about your dad, Floyd, was that he was just like top notch. I mean, Christy was even mentioning yesterday that you guys used to have cattle sales, dairy cattle sales, and he'd pair them up, and then whatever one the person wanted, he'd sell and keep and whatever.
Well, when we bought the farm that we moved to in 60,
yep,
he got 360 acres, bought all the machinery and all the cattle. And Dad was very knowledgeable on Holstein breeding, so it was a good friend of his that owned the farm. And so he'd been breeding with the bulls that my dad had been using.
Okay.
And the Wisconsin Reformatory was famous for their Holstein herd. So in 1960, my dad was showing an aged Holstein bull and with symbol. And here at the Wisconsin Fair, my dad would have a showstring of registered Holsteins down in the cow barn.
And
a showstring of Clydesdales up in this barn. And you learned the man's running on 2 to 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Be a good little boy.
Yeah. But he must have just been, a true man of livestock. And then when he had all those horses to sell, people know that they could trust his judgment on a horse, and they would just pick it up, take it, and take it by his word.
Freddie Polander,
yeah,
got two beautiful black mares.
Okay,
out of that, and a few years later, we had a fawn-colored stud foal born, and Dad called up Freddie, you know, when it was like 3 weeks old, and he said, "I got a stud for you."
Yeah,
and you know, it was out of a Ballgreen Final Command daughter.
Okay.
And Fred bought him sight unseen as a, well, after he got weaned.
Yeah. And but he just trusted your dad's judgment.
Yeah, and he used him for 15, I don't think the horse ever left the place. He died there.
Wow.
Back to when one of my first judging assignments was out at the Extravaganza.
Where was that at?
Washington.
Is that the Northwest?
SeaTac. You flew into SeaTac, and then it was at... I don't remember the town anymore.
Okay.
It was a pretty big show. And Mrs. Polander was still driving this old stallion in the
that
80s
he
cart
had
class.
Sold, that your dad had sold to him.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Full circle.
Full circle.
The ringman said you might want to take it easy on him.
Yeah.
Well, so the old stud did... two rounds, reversed himself, went to a walk, walked a little bit, did a round and a half, and lined up.
So did she even really drive then, he just kind of do the class himself?
Yeah, he did the class himself.
Those old horses, they're so good for that. Half the time you fight with those old horses to just try to keep them on the rail to not want to line up. As soon as they see that ring guy moving towards the middle, it's done, it's time. Get in.
Don't you dare take one extra lap after that reverse, because they're done.
Yeah. Oh, the horse might have died on us.
He knew his limits.
So that was a blast judging that. And I was taught to judge a Clydesdale or any horse from the ground up.
Yep. That's where the foundation is.
Yes. And no foot, no horse.
Yeah.
And so I judged all breeds the first day of the show, and then after that it had an evening show, and then I went out to the fairgrounds about 1 and had lunch, and a Belgian breeder, I'm assuming Belgian, that I didn't even know came up and, "What didn't you like about my horse?" And I went, "God." And I mean, you remember the good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're easy to remember, and I saw it, and they said, "Is that the one with the teacup feet and the bogs on both sides of his, both hocks?" And he said, "You didn't like his head, did you?"
Yeah, it was the head.
And I said, "Well, he was in pretty good shape."
Yeah, I lost it.
And you could lead him, so he must have had a head.
So speed us up to now, Dan. How many kids did you have? You have two daughters?
Two daughters, yeah.
Okay. Are either of them into the horses at all?
My daughter, Kim, is living on the farm, and she's helping as much as she can because she's got a two-year-old.
So you got the fourth generation starting.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's exciting.
So at three, are you going to have your grandchild with you as you spread manure?
I doubt it. Because I'm...
You don't spread manure?
So afraid that I'd drop them or hurt them or something, you know.
And then you got to deal with the wrath of Kim.
Yeah.
Oh. Well. So how many horses you got now?
I'm down to 7.
Okay. Well, that's a really kind of nice number. Management.
It is for when you're 74. It's easy to handle. And,
yeah.
But people never realize we never had more than 14 or 15 horses.
Oh, really?
Ever?
Ever.
Holy crap.
I always thought it was much more than that.
Even when your dad was around?
Yeah. Oh.
Holy schmuck. I guess
we didn't
never
have any. No stable room, no anything.
I just assumed they had like 25 or 30 head running.
Oh, no.
Easy.
And,
wow.
I guess when you think of a breeder, you're thinking multiple generations. It's easy to get to 30. Yeah.
But we had those Ballgreen Final Command mares, and everything was working great. Well, one never had a foal.
Okay.
And then, but out of those four, they all were champion mare here at Milwaukee one time or another.
Yeah.
And it was you know, great place to start.
So you still breeding mares now?
Yeah.
Okay. What stud are you using now?
Merle Brooks has got a horse called Billy Bob.
Okay.
And then I bred another mare to one of Dusty's.
Oh, okay. One of the Brooks boys.
From Gord Eagles.
Okay, gotcha.
But it's, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, Clydesdale foals, it seemed like they wanted to die the minute they were born.
Yeah. I feel like they still want to die.
I think it's genetic, though. I think there's some prominent sires that are known for having weak offspring right off the bat, and I think there's some that are just hit up and go. Like,
yeah. Well, when I don't even remember what year that I got the Prince of Wales, or Roger Emmons and Jim Emmons and I, there was 5 shares and I had 3. And the Prince of Wales lived at my place. And we bred as many outside mares as came in, but they were like $300 a piece. And
that was the service
breeding
fee.
Yeah. The service fee. And I don't know if I should tell this story, but I will.
Yeah. That's why you're here.
It's wide open, Dan. Yeah.
My wife said, Prince, you know, I bought him from Barry Farrell at the Toronto show.
Okay.
Because he brought him over for Mr. Bush's approval. Mr. Bush said, I don't need another goddamn stallion. So, and I was the first guy to ask him, if Mr. Bush doesn't want him, can I buy him?
Yeah.
And so he, yeah. And
what did you have to give for him, if you don't mind me asking? What did you have to pay for him, if you don't mind me asking?
$10,000.
Okay. And that was in what year? I just wanted to know what kind of horses were
early bringing. 80s.
Okay. Well, that was good money back then.
Oh, yeah.
Big money.
So, but my wife was in the barn one night, and she said, you be careful. I mean, he was just a 2-year-old. He never takes his eyes off of you. When you're in the barn, he follows you everywhere. I didn't think anything of it. I handled stallions before, and young horse, so I put a chain under his jaw, and my good Mabel mare was in heat, and we had a place up by the cow barn with yard gate, so you had a, and a wall, so you had a place to breed. And I took him up there, and she was in heat, and he got ready to mount, and when he mounted, he whirled and came at me, and he was going to pound me into a puddle. And I had a rope and a chain. And somehow I got away from him and got him back down in the barn. And I got the old twitch handle, which was an old shovel handle.
Yep.
And I went back up there and we did it again. And I said, I wonder if you're stupid enough to do this.
Try this again, yeah.
When he came at me, I hit him right between the eyes.
Yeah.
And he went down, and I went, oh, God, I killed him.
You spent $10,000.
There was no insurance in those days either.
But I had him insured.
Oh, you did?
Oh, you did have him insured.
So I'm standing there trying to think of what
excuse. How am I going
to
explain this to
the
vet?
The mayor kicked him in the head.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to use.
Get rid of the twitch handle quick.
Pretty soon he sat up and shook his head and stood up, bred the mayor, and we went back down to the barn.
Holy crap.
And from then on, you didn't need the chain under his jaw. He and I made a deal. I'm in charge, but you get to breed all the mares.
Yeah.
And you can walk him up with a twine string on his halter. And the first 3 days, he wouldn't breed them. They're standing there peeing. And he went, no.
You're just scared of getting the club
together.
And 4, 5, and 6, zip, bang, done. And, you know, and then maybe 7 and 8, nope, mm-mm. You know, they always said, well, they ovulated at the end of the estrus.
Yeah.
And nope. And
he had a type
he
or
was
what?
Like 90% breeding. You know, he knew
he
when they were going to ovulate.
You.
And if they'd already ovulate, I'm not wasting my stuff. You know?
Literally, he's smarter than Dan.
Yeah. So you do have some mares that just constantly, they just constantly piss and they'll tease, even if they are bred.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was, and so that's what spoiled me for...
How were his offspring? Would they jump up and would they...
Like, yeah, they were vigorous.
Okay.
You know? But of the three guys in the syndicate, Roger got better horses. Jim got better foal, you know, than they had. And mine weren't as good as their mother's.
Okay.
You know, and just... And by the time you realize this, you're 6-8 years you're down the road.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
You know, and you're fighting it here.
Yeah.
So I...
It just wasn't crossing right with what the mares you had, but it was working on other mares, different pedigree mares.
It just wasn't the right cross.
Yeah.
And how do you know until you try it?
No, and you got to do a couple cycles to really, really know what he's going to throw.
You know, because, you know, it looks like a good yearling. It looks like a good 2-year-old. But by the time it's 4 or 5, it hasn't developed.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I got one at home that she peaked as a foal.
Yeah.
I mean, she looked, I was so excited about her as a foal. And it's just like, God, I wish you could just been a forever a foal because you actually look cool then. But, I mean, we've all had those.
Yeah, or you have the foal that you're like,
looks incredible, and then it looks like a puke at 3.
Yeah. Or the bad foal that then all of a sudden peaks at 3, and you're like, where did this come from? Yeah. Some of those late developers.
I'd rather have that, though.
So the horse that Molesky's and Jim owned together, and I can't remember his name, but he was at Jim's place, so I went and got him and brought him over. And Jim says, I don't have anybody in heat, you can keep him a few days. This is the famous breeding story. So Mabel's daughter, Mary.
This is the school bus story, right?
Had a foal on her side, and they were in the upper pasture. So I would put the foal in the gooseneck trailer.
Yep.
And then tie the mare to the trailer and go get the stud. Well, I had that much accomplished. And put a chain on this stud. And when we left the barn, I was like water skiing. He was headed for the mare.
No stopping it.
Just, and, but we get up there and she's got her right side plastered against
clamped
the trailer.
To the trailer, yeah.
So I tap her on her butt and get her over and she goes all the way over and her left side. So just as I'm tapping her on her left side, the stallion mounted. And my face is shoved against her cheek, and his penis is going by my ear, and I'm praying that she's really in heat, because I really don't want to get kicked to death.
I think they've been praying I was somewhere else, not praying she's in heat.
So, and I can't get out because I'm next to the trailer. And thank God she'd taken a step or two back, and I'm going, when he gets done, he's going to slide off, and his hoof is going to hit me in the head.
Love you, yeah.
So as he's sliding off, she was back far enough, and I slipped between the truck and trailer.
Oh, my God.
And that's why I'm here today.
Did she settle?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that just made the story
worse. Yeah, the important part.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Ay. So through all your years, and since you grew up with this, is there a mare or is there a horse, stallion, gelding, mare, that whether your dad raised it, you bred it, or just you saw at a show that you thought was like the most impactful Clyde of your era, is there a horse that sticks out to that?
I don't know. If there was a mare in that truckload.
From Budweiser.
Yeah. Commands Mabel.
Okay.
And my brother had just had eye surgery, so he got first pick of the four, and he picked Command
Was he
Sally.
Recovered from the... Mm-hmm. He wasn't then recovered from the eye surgery then?
Well, no, she was a good mare.
Oh, okay.
She was the first mare. She was champion as a 2-year-old here in the state fair.
Okay.
But she was a roan.
Okay.
But the only reason he picked her was she was the only one you could touch.
Oh.
Oh.
You know,
I want a horse like
that. The others
pet.
Were all wild, as, you know.
Yeah.
She was the only one broke to lead.
Okay.
And she'd eat oats out of your hand. And I picked Commands Mabel. And our old hired man at the time said, you got the right one. Okay. So, and Mabel was champion here. And there's some famous pictures of her. And when Dad retired from the board, they gave him a painting of that mare that hangs in my living room.
That's
and
cool.
So, and she had one son for us who was named Caesar, and he was champion here too as a two-year-old, but we couldn't use him on anything because, you know, he was related.
Yeah.
So we ended up selling him.
Who ended up getting him?
Then that stupid mare wouldn't get pregnant again. So after about 4 years, Dad came in and he said, I've had an offer on Mabel. And I sold her. So go out and pick yourself a different horse.
Oh.
What'd you get for it?
I think in, that would have been about $6,300 or $6,400, $1,500.
Okay. I just want to give the listeners an idea of what Clydes were bringing in different years.
And Floyd Congers bought her.
Okay.
And he had a pair of mares and a pair of gildings. And he, oh, they were winning every, they were really good quality animals. And tough to beat. And after about 6 or 7 years, Mabel couldn't keep up. She was just too fat. She was the easiest keeping horse I've ever seen in my life. So I have no idea how much money he got from Emerald Bussey for her.
Yeah.
And Emerald turned her out in his paved barnyard and would throw her a slice of hay in the morning and a slice of hay at night and all the water she could drink for about 8 months.
Just to get her to slim down.
Well, he got her down to about 1,900 pounds.
Okay.
I mean, she's a big mare.
Yeah.
And then the next spring, he turned her out with 2 3-year-old Belgian stallions.
Oh, nice cross.
And lo and behold, she got settled. Pregnant.
Oh, what a... Why would he throw her out with Belgians?
So then the next year, he bred her to a Clyde stallion.
Okay.
And got a stud foal. And the next year, he bred her, same Clyde stallion, and we got the Mabel that I showed.
Yep.
And as a yearling, we had sold 4 horses to Japan and didn't tell anybody.
And what year was this?
Yeah.
Oh. Late 70s.
Okay.
So what was the reason for not telling anyone? It just wasn't...
Because we wanted to buy horses.
Oh, so yeah, if you told that,
you're not
going to
tell the world that the I've got money to piss away.
Yeah, that's true. Got it.
So we went to Emerald Bussey's on the way to the Royal Winter Fair.
Yeah.
And which set up a pattern of the way we shop for horses, or I shop for horses later. And Emerald had 20, 25 horses out there, and, you know, what do you got to have for that one? Well, what about that one? What about, and they were all 1,500, 1,500, 1,500. And so we ended up buying 2. And that was the Mabel that I showed for 20 years.
Yeah.
And a mare that, can't remember her name, but when the first Clyde, she was about 2 or 3, when they had the first Clyde sale at Waterloo.
Okay.
And there was only like 6 or 8 horses in it. And we were going to no-sale her. And when Dad was tying her tail, he had very touchy feet. She stepped on his foot and wouldn't get off. So she went out the door and he said, sell the son of a bitch.
All because she stood on his foot. All intents to keep her.
And Mary Flynn bought her.
Okay.
And sold, I think, the first daughter out of that mare went to someone in Canada. And as a 3 or 4 year old was reserve champion at the Royal.
Oh, shit.
Oh. You know, it's crap like that.
Yeah.
That happened.
Yeah. Well, we've all had those horses where you just, like, there might be the prettiest horse in the barn, but you just don't get along with it.
Yeah.
Like, you just, nothing.
Or they don't flourish.
Yeah.
Like, you can have a mare in your barn that never settles. You sell them, and they have fabulous colts for somebody else.
It just wasn't meant to be in your barn. But, yeah, it always works like that. Always.
So, So, Dan, because we're at the Wisconsin State Fair, what is one of your best Wisconsin State Fair memories? You've shown here for a long time.
There's got to be some good stories.
There's
got
to be some good ones.
Yeah. But.
And they don't even have to be PC.
Or PG. No, this is for adult listeners.
Well, this.
So, let her rip.
It was in probably mid to late 70s. And I had a good four mayors.
Okay.
I for a number of years, I had a good pair, and they weren't all the same. But we were showing against Gildings. There weren't mayor classes.
Just all four, open four horse hitch, whatever. Yeah.
So really, there was only 1-4, 1-6, 1-unicorn. Yeah. You're all together.
So, his name was right on, just on my tongue, and now I can't say it. Guy that Ned Neiman
Dennis Berry.
For.
Dennis Berry came
Dennis
with his
Berry
Gildings.
Was here showing.
That year, okay.
Yep. And Craig Grange was driving.
Yep.
And we went in with a four, and Craig Grange and I were lined up next to one another. And after the judge walked away, and he was further down the line, Craig goes, "Did I have a lame horse?" Well, I never told this to Craig, but I had no idea if he had a lame horse or not. I'm too busy driving my hit
watching his
to be checking yours.
Yeah.
But I just said, "Oh, yeah, Lambert and Hale." And lo and behold, I, with four mares, beat Dennis Berry's Gildings.
He beat Hallamore Corporation.
Hallamore, yeah.
That is friggin' cool.
Yeah.
And that was back at the it was the National here yet then or not?
No, that was pre-National.
Okay, gotcha. Yep. That's freaking cool.
And then, did I have a lame one?
In the Cooper years,
yeah,
Paul was tough to beat.
Well, they just kept importing everything.
Yep. And I had a Mabel daughter that was three. She out of King George. And Waddy Smith was judging. And I showed the mayor and Cooper had one or two in the class, and Waddy's walking back and forth, and he comes over and he points at me for first. And I went, "Me?"
"Are you sure?"
And he said, "Yeah, you
get out there."
And I'm wearing bell-bottom pants.
Stylish.
And I stepped on my pants when I went to take the mirror out of line and fell. And Waddy says, "Letty, act like you've done this before."
We I'll be honest, we talked to a couple of people upstairs here yesterday and said we were going to interview you, and the stories just kept flowing about it. One before we get into some of those, I did want to ask, how did Mary Hirsch Justice help you a couple of years now? How did that come about?
She helped my dad and I in started in, I think, 1968.
Okay.
Oh, so it's been a while.
She was showing, she lived 5 miles away.
Oh, okay.
Up different county, but Dutch Mill Guernseys were pretty famous at that time.
Okay.
And she lived near them and was showing one of their calves in 4-H and was down here for the state fair. And it's amazing how much free time the 4-H kids have. You got one calf to take care of all day long.
Yeah.
And maybe you have 2 hours of barn duty.
Yeah.
So she came up to the barn, and Dad always said, if somebody wants to work for free, let them.
That's a good philosophy. No wonder why he was successful.
Yeah. So she started helping us then.
Okay.
And about 8 or 10 years ago, we're at the county fair. We had not kept in touch.
Yeah.
And she shows up to take pictures. And we were running behind. So she set her camera down and went to work. I didn't let her get away.
Cool.
And the first year she helped at the county fair, and then I called her up and said, "Hey, would you like to go to Milwaukee, Wisconsin State Fair?" "Oh, I'd love to." "Good, good." And then I said, "Well, we still sleep in the barn."
Mm-hmm.
And it was dead silence. And I said, I have two daughters. You will be sleeping with her, and I will be sleeping with the other help.
Yeah.
Oh, fine. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you knew where you stood when that relationship right off the bat.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm also married, so.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about that later.
Oh, whatever. Right. But Mary's a workaholic.
Yeah, she just seems so into it. And, like, I'll be honest, since she got, like, started helping you again, it seemed like it almost revitalized your wanting to show horses.
Well, in a way.
Yeah. Well, life gets busy, and then you have less time to put into it with work and kids and all that.
Yeah.
When she jumped back in, it just seemed like there was a whole revitalization of...
Well, you got back in the hitching ring and not just the halter ring and kind of bringing it all back. Going to a few... It seems like you've been going to a few more shows, too, since you brought her back.
Yeah. Well, we've had some good folds, bad folds, you know, but we're working at it.
Yeah.
And we've had some tough luck the last 2 years. I've got a 19-1 mare at home, and when she was a baby, I had my first heart experience. I was in the hospital, and she called and goes, the foal's in the fence, and the wire is all the way around the leg, below the hock. I can see the bone, and it's still hooked on both ends. You know, like... If you don't have pliers to get her, you know, to cut the wire, I still don't know how she got her out. And then I said, well, call the vet and, you know.
Get the vet there, yeah.
And she called back, and I'm in the car on the way home, and she goes, he won't come. He said he will not work on it unless it's in the stock at his
clinic.
Clinic, yeah. So, and I said, oh, crap, GMC 7000 is hooked up to the 32-foot trailer, and that's the only trailer we got.
Yeah.
And it's a 5-speed. So I taught Mary how to drive a 5-speed.
Over the phone?
Damn near, over the phone.
Holy crap. And that's that same free help your dad was saying keep around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Anybody who can learn to do a 5-speed on the phone.
And I was ordered, you know, not to drive heavy equipment, not to do yada, 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 yada. Well, the fence is down. They needed a skid steer, and I'm the only one who knew how to drive a skid steer, so I snuck outside, and my wife caught me driving back, parking the skid steer. You're not supposed to be driving that.
You nailed that typical wife nag, I think.
Yeah.
Feels like he's heard it.
I think
he's
heard it. Well, it's not like I don't deserve it.
But he just nailed it.
Yeah.
Speaking of stories, I remember there was a year here. I was back when I helped Pat and Tanya Connors and Dustin Brooks did, and we just got done loading downstairs here at Wisconsin State Fair. And you pull in and open up the trailer door, and there's newspaper shreds flying everywhere because it was breezy and windy. And you had a mare that you let off. And it was a long rope, and there was a colt with her. The colt jumped off and spun around and kicked you right in the nuts. And you dropped that lead line of that mare, and you clutched over and bent over, because I'm sure it hurt like a bitch.
Oh, I thought I was going to start puking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
And the mare's wandering around, and the foal's wandering around. I said, Dan, you want me to catch her? And your exact words were verbatim, fuck that colt, fuck that bitch. So we got him. We put him in the barn for you. And you had other horses on the trailer. We asked you on us to unload those for you, and you said nope. And you proceeded to make sure you got the same or one of the scooters, just like the one you rolled up here on. And I think you had ice on your nuts for 3 days driving around a scooter.
It was the size of a large grapefruit. So
there's another story that came up
Joe
yesterday.
Joe Schwartz.
Go ahead.
You know, said, my wife's not here yet, but I'll send her down.
Yeah.
And she had told him that I was injured.
Yeah.
And she, Danny, are you okay? Is everything all right? And I said, would you kiss it and make it better? And she said, where is it? And I went.
Kiss it?
Just see Kathy, too. She's such a sweet, like she's so believable and gullible.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That is hilarious. Another story that came up, actually Dustin brought up yesterday when we talked about getting to interview you. He said, do you remember the year he loaded all the horses up and then looked back and saw the show cart sitting there? And you were wandering around show cart for sale, selling it cheap.
Oh.
You gotta tell the story about Boone County you told Christy and I yesterday, Dan.
The what?
The Boone County story. The one that you said that the gal was, that the rabbit lady would come over and...
Was that here in Wisconsin, or was that in Boone County?
That's Boone County. And
your live interview.
Steve Paulson brought over a guy from National Public Radio. Mm-hmm. And he said, this is the guy who's been showing here the longest, and I wasn't probably the oldest showman, but I'd shown more than a lot of guys. And Dan, would you give this guy an interview?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, and it was a very warm day, and we were in my tack stall, and I had another unpaid friend who was polishing harness.
You need to teach us how to get this unpaid help, because we're not good at it.
And, well, she nursed both of her children in my tack stalls, you know. Not my children, her children. So,
otherwise, he's going to say, wow, that's really some incredible help.
But it's really warm, and we had a fan blowing in there, but I'm sitting on the far right, and the NPR guy is right in front of me, and she is behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And the fan's blowing, but she's still sweating. So she goes to take her outer clothing off, and somehow bra and all came off. Just as the guy is asking me, what do you look for in a lady's cart? And I said, cleavage. And
what was the guy's face when he said it?
Well, it just went blank, pale. And he goes, we're live. And I said, nobody's dumb enough to interview me live.
Oh, God. So, Christy did tell me that we had to ask you about Smokey Bear.
So, I grew up, and my dad told me a lot of stories about how showing was in... Because you and him showed together in the late 70s, 80s. There's kind of a clan of you that goes way back. And loved, as a kid, listening to all the stories and the things that you went through and just how different it was. And he tells me this story about your first wife, Smokey Bear. Number one, I really thought as a kid he made that up, because Smokey Bear was a guy that told you not to, like, light
campfires
in the forest. So I'm like, how could that be somebody's wife? Until then, he proceeds to tell me that this said lady wore a bikini to show in a cart class, and that was his story to tell me what appropriate dress was in a cart class.
Yeah.
So is that a fake story? Like, I feel
like it was
made... I don't
think she wore a bikini, but it might have been a halter top. And a big hat. She always had a giant hat on. And so Emmons, Jim, we'd been showing in Indiana. And we'd showed all day, and we're loading out, and we've got to be in Ohio the next day, and we're showing that night.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept, every time I walked a horse to the trailer, I'm going by this carny stand with this loop of intestine sausage in there. And God, I was hungry. So I got a sandwich, and I got the raw onions and the chopped onions and the cooked onions and the green peppers and the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm.
So of course I had dysentery when I got to Ohio. And I had to walk by. Smokey Bear was helping someone, a Belgian breeder.
Okay.
And I had to walk by her to get to the bathroom. And eventually, I could get back. She was about halfway. And I get there, and I chatted her up. And then I have to run back to the bathroom. And this seven or eight times. And then somehow I...
Did she realize you were always going to the bathroom? Like, that's...
I have no idea. Didn't
probably
ask.
Probably not. Yeah.
And so I asked her if she'd help me at the Michigan State Fair where we were going next.
Yeah.
For free, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Just, yeah, just
game here.
Just gotta clarify that you never paid anybody.
So, and I had a single axle tractor on that old Possum Belly trailer, and we made it to Detroit, but on the outskirts of Detroit, it went from 3 lanes to 1 lane with hardly any warning.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the smoke rolling off the guy's semi's tires in front of me, and I'm pumping the brakes and came awful close to hitting him. And then I look in my mirror and here comes a guy at me.
Mm.
And, you know, like, he didn't hit me. He's like 3 feet from my bumper.
Yeah. Ooh.
And I walked back there, and the back horse, it had a roll-up door in the center.
Okay.
And the back horse had gone down, and her front feet were up, out of the trailer.
Oh.
And the door had gone up. And
yeah.
Yeah. And the guy said, I saw those feet come out from under that door, and I was bound and determined I wasn't going to hit that. And this was ancient history, because this would have been about, oh, I suppose 10 in the morning, if that. And when the state patrol showed up to clear the accident ahead of us, I just happened to have a cooler inside the Possum Belly, and there's a little door there. So me and the other two truck drivers were sitting there drinking a beer.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays we'd all be thrown in jail.
I was just going to say, was this fine in this time era?
I think he just looked the other way because.
Yeah.
Wow. And he tells us the night before during rush hour, a semi had gone over top of a car in the same damn place, and the car had exploded and killed both drivers.
Holy crap. Ooh.
You know, and I'm going, and you couldn't put up more signs.
Signs, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Was the mare okay?
Yeah, she was okay. Fine.
Good. Ay, ay, ay. So how did Smokey Bear do? Was she okay in the truck?
yeah, she was fine in the truck. But
he keeps weaving away from this.
I thought she was going to land on your lap or something or what was going to happen there.
So,
but how long were you married to her?
5 years.
Okay. Gotcha.
And she knew more about Wisconsin law than I did.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah. Because it's a joint property state, but it's not a full joint property state until 5 years.
Oh.
Gotcha.
And then Dad died right after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And I got the divorce papers in December. And I didn't know it.
Yeah.
But in the state of Wisconsin, inherited property is not joint.
And you inherited it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I didn't because my dad put it in a trust.
Oh, well. So then she couldn't get it.
Right.
Yeah, thank God.
So your dad was a very smart businessman. My
brother, the only one this really screwed up was my brother.
Okay.
Because, you know, he and I ended up splitting the trust.
Yeah.
And it did absolutely no good. Well, maybe it did because I got the divorce papers and she was gone.
Yeah.
But I needed, I don't know if it was a new barn cleaner or a silo unloader. And I called up the trust company and I said, well, and they said, well, we don't know a damn thing about that. And I said, yeah, but you're supposed to help me make the decisions or tell me I can spend this money. Well, do you think you should spend the money? Yeah. Well, then go ahead and do it.
Oh.
And I never called them again.
Yeah.
And that ended when I was 30.
Okay.
And my brother never wanted to sell the farm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and Dad still owed money on it. So anything we made went to pay that
off. Yeah.
And so he was a veterinarian and he did that for 23 or 4 years. And he was in a partnership with two brothers and he found out how much they were skimming off the top. So he went back to school. At the University of Wisconsin wouldn't take him.
He's already a vet?
Yeah. But he had, and during his practice, he had done research on mastitis in cows.
Yeah.
You know, and all kinds of stuff. And he presented that to him, and he said, I'd like to do this. And no. So he went to the University of Minnesota, and the guy said, no, we don't need mastitis, but there's this pig disease. And that unless you get to the corpse within 12 hours, you can't prove what
can't
killed
it. Can't test it, yeah.
So my brother spent 3.5, 4 years at the University of Minnesota and became the world-recognized authority on this disease. And he developed a test for it.
No shit.
And he asked the wow. university, do you want to patent this? No, there wouldn't be any money in that. So that is now the test for the disease in the whole world.
Wow.
And
they could have owned the fucking patent.
Yes.
But he blew through his 401k. He had 4 children and is going to school and, you know.
Yeah.
And they gave him like $25,000 a year to live in Minneapolis or St. Paul. And he just, I'm ready to sell.
Yeah.
So we worked out a deal and I bought the other half of the farm from him.
On land contract or something like that, yeah.
Yep.
Wow. So we got to end this, Dan, with one story. You got another famous story you can share off the top of your head.
Well, yeah, the one about Mabel's last son.
Okay.
And I used him on some mares.
Yeah.
And showed him a lot, and drove him in a cart, and but he always wanted to try me, but he chickened out.
Mm-hmm.
He always wanted to try me, but he chickened out. And finally, it's June, and I'm done milking. The wife and kids are gone. The hired man's left. And I go to breed a mare, and he wheels and comes at me. And I used to bulk up during the winter.
Yeah.
I'd get 260, 270.
A little winter weight.
Yep.
Yeah. And then spring field work and first crop hay, and you'd be back
dress
down
to... Dress a foaling. Yeah.
So all I had on was a pair of tennis shoes and cut-off shorts. And he comes at me, and I'm jerking on the chain and swearing at him, and my pants fell around my ankles. And we went up and down the driveway twice.
You're waddling with him? Or
yeah. Taking itty-bitty steps. And the only thing I could think of is, if he gets me and pounds me into a puddle,
what are they going to think?
I've got a mare tied to a post in heat and my pants are around my ankles.
What are the cops going to think?
Yeah, what?
Nobody's going to piece this back together.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, one other thing about Smokey.
Yeah.
We had a horse named Scotty.
Okay.
A great cart horse.
Yeah.
I mean, really a mover and go. And so she'd wear a dress with cleavage.
Yeah.
And
yes, because that's how you win a lady's cart.
Well, yeah.
Skin to win.
Yeah. But you really needed safety glasses.
Because he'd throw
He had
dirt.
So much rear leg action, he was kicking sand in your face.
Mm-hmm.
So every time she got done in a ring showing, she'd stand up and shake her top, and all the sand would fall out.
She get up on a braiding stool at the fair to do that or no?
So if anybody hears this,
yeah,
I still don't know what she died of.
Oh.
And she wasn't found with a stallion near her pants down, was she?
No.
Okay.
Oh, man, Dan.
Well, this has been good, Dan. We just wanted to kind of... I've known you since I've been a kid, and the stories I've heard from my parents when the parents talk to you or from around the barn have been incredible, and I wanted to get some of that stuff recorded because there's going to be a time and day where we're not going to be able to come to Wisconsin Day Fair and hear you tell them. So I just wanted to get all that recorded, and it's been awesome talking
to you. One more thing.
Yeah.
Jeff Reese helped me for years.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I was short of help. I actually paid him.
And Jeff
must have been good.
So
Shit.
I called his family up and I said, "You think Jeff could help us?" And just a green country boy,
mm-hmm.
you know, from Blue Earth, Wisconsin. And she said, "We'll call you back and let you know." And they said yes, and brought Jeff up, and we went from, you know, Wisconsin, and then did Boone, and then up to the Twin Cities. And I mean, there was, he didn't know anybody. And he's 16 years old, and he was homesick, and we got him through it. And years later, he worked for us for like 16 years, all the way through college and after.
Just and at the shows or at the farm?
At the shows.
Okay. Yeah.
And I said, "You know why we got along so well?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "It's because I was the first adult who treated you like an adult."
Yeah.
Yep. And his mother used to come to the Boone County, and we'd have breakfast with in their motorhome.
Mm-hmm.
And after Jeff had gone and everybody else, I was sitting there, and she goes, "You know that first year you called us?" "Yeah." "We didn't know what to do. You did not have the best reputation. I mean, yeah, you were a good horseman, and you played by the rules, but you also had an awful lot of fun."
Yeah.
"And we didn't know if our boy could..."
Would be safe or... Yeah. Looked after.
Jeff never took a sip of beer.
No shit.
And one of the last years going into St. Paul, there were three of us in the cab. And Dan Rand, who was another guy helping me, is chewed tobacco. And he offered Copenhagen to Jeff. And I'm going, "Oh, God, no, please."
Please say no.
And Jeff reaches in his pocket and he goes, "No, I got these little things called bandits, and they're Copenhagen in a sack, you know, when you put it in your mouth." "Oh, God. No, tell your mother I didn't teach you that."
"No, I already have these."
Not as innocent as you thought he was.
And he's here helping Taft, isn't he?
Hmm?
Is he here helping Taft?
No, he helped Grandview for a few years after he helped you.
We were...
He's not here. No, I was thinking, I saw him down in Florida.
Yep.
This last
My daughter's carpal tunnel is kicked in and she can't roll.
Mm-hmm.
And they volunteered to come down and roll my mares. And they said, "We're a little short on help. Could you help us hook the six?" "Sure." So, you know, one back scratches the other back and everybody's happy. So, we lent him a horse yesterday because he had one that had some kind of reaction whenever the harness went on his neck, and he started like he was being scratched. And he wouldn't stop till the harness came off.
Yeah.
So we gave him a mare to use, and so he could, and then he used her in the six and the four and then the unicorn.
Best horse they had here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they borrowed.
But,
It was free, remember? Yeah. It was free.
No, it is like a big family, though. I mean, everyone, for the most part.
I mean, there's been some political problems.
Yeah.
And
I think that's because everyone's taking this competition. Their eyes aren't on why they got in it. We were talking about this yesterday.
Yeah.
Everyone's lost sight of why they got into this. And they got into this because they enjoyed the camaraderie in the beginning. Everyone helped each other out. It was like a big family.
Yeah.
And now the competition gets a little bit more fierce. There's a little bit more money involved. And then now we lose sight of the family and help each other out aspect. We need to get back to that kind of shit. Because that's all why we got hooked on this. It's the relationships we made with everybody. So we need to, I don't know how to get back to that, but we thought by maybe letting hear these stories and cutting up and laughing a little bit more.
We had this same problem. Paul Cooper liked to poke the bear.
Yeah.
You know, and he would deliberately go out of his way to piss people off just to have something going on in the organization. And it seems like every time the Clyde Breeders are just going great, we got to shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we'll live through it. You know, we'll get back at it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's, I think it's evolving, and I think we're going to, every, like everything in politics or with the clothing styles, everything comes full circle. So I think we're rounding that corner, and I hope we can get back to why we all got into this and got home.
Yeah.
The pendulum kind of swings back, but you're right, Dan. All it takes is one topic that kind of divides a group of people one way or the other that tends to change our climate a little bit.
Yeah.
So,
well, this has been great.
The reason I quit showing at the Ohio State Fair, I went into the ring with a mayor cart, and there was a bump going into the ring. Mm-hmm. We hit that bump, and she started to kick. And it felt like her feet were coming on either side of my head. And on the third kick, she came down on the outside of both shafts and snapped them off. And that cart had been through a lot. Someone had borrowed it in Waverly, Waterloo. And they had the same thing happen. And they got, you would think that if the shafts came off the cart, that it would go over backwards with people sitting in. It dumped them under the cart, and they got dragged on the blacktop.
Oh.
And so when this happened to me, I'm leaning way back, and I drove her into the wall. Because there was other guys in there. I'm not turning up.
Yeah.
And the guy in the little red coat and, you know, top hat and breeches came over and grabbed her. And she reared and almost put him over the wall.
Jesus.
And not one of the Ohio breeders
came over to help.
Yeah, Percheron and Belgian were all lined up along the wall sitting there, and not a one. Yeah. My own crew came in, got us out of it, and I said, I didn't realize I'd pissed that many people off.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of friends in the Belgian Percheron people, and they weren't in there.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's funny you said that, because there was a big accident yesterday at Ohio, and the videos of it, and I've got friends that were down there, and they said everyone tried to pitch in and help everybody out, and that's what I've always told people I've helped. Is said, you know, you should be able to, you know, if something goes wrong, you usually got more help at a show than you got
at
home, because there's all kinds of exhibitors that'll help you out, and I don't know how to get more back to that, but I think it comes down to communication. I think nowadays with social media, you can make a comment about something, or it's like the game of telephone, where so-and-so said this and so-and-so, and then all of a sudden the story changes of what they even said, and there used to not be that kind of communication. You know, now it's texting, cell phones, internet. Like, it's just, everything gets blown out of proportion because one person perceives it wrong, and that's where we thought, well, if we could get what actually people are and get kind of introduced, now people that never met you before can hear your voice, hear that, you know, how you got started, your humble beginnings, and where you're at today. And
so 20 years later, maybe longer, I was judging the Shire National Show in the Colorado State Fair.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 4 days. And every day there was five other judges. And, you know, we rode in a van together out and then back to the same hotel. And the first day, this guy comes up and goes, I know your face. And I go, you look familiar. And we spent 4 days trying to figure out where we'd run into one another. And the last night on the way back, he goes, you know, they smoothed the bump out at the Ohio State Fair.
Oh, comes full circle.
And I said, yeah. And he said, remember when that Clyde Mayer went in there and busted the shavs off that cart and he drove her into the wall? Yeah. And he said, I ran over and grabbed that bitch.
Yeah.
And I said, thank you.
Yeah.
We'd never been introduced and never saw another. Again, we had a couple of drinks and shook hands and, you know.
Holy shit. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's just amazing how things like that,
come
what do they call
circle.
That, serendipity or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Well, we got to wrap up, Dan. We got to go help Andrew get his horses ready. But thanks again for joining. Thanks for having me.
This was fun.
This is awesome.
Yep.